In partnership again with the HBCU Experience Movement and their new book that's coming out this June, the HBCU Experience, the Southern University System Edition, I am interviewing some of the co-authors of this book, and I hope you enjoy all of these episodes in this season to help out the HBCUs and spread awareness for HBCUs. I would like to introduce you to Courtney Walker. Courtney Sierra Walker was born and raised in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. She is a proud Christian who spreads agape love everywhere she goes. At an early age, Courtney discovered her passion for helping others. She has dedicated countless hours to giving back to those who are less fortunate. Courtney has approximately 9 years of experience in the public sector. She has managed successful political campaigns in Baton Rouge and New Orleans. She volunteers with several organizations and gives back to the community in every chance she gets. Courtney received 2 degrees from Southern University A&M College. She attained her undergraduate degree in political science with honors fall of 2013. Spring 2019, she obtained her Master's of Public Administration degree with a concentration in healthcare administration. During graduate school, she learned how to write grants. With the education received in her grant writing course, she began to write grants for others through her freelance writing business, CC's Freelance Services. Courtney is also a proud owner of the online boutique Exotic Souls and Accessories LLC. Currently, she is employed at a prestigious law firm, Murray & Murray LLC. In her spare time, she enjoys spending time with family, cooking, reading books, writing poetry, and conducting research on how to eradicate homelessness in her community. With her education and skill set, she plans to open a nonprofit organization someday. Her goal is to help the less fortunate by providing resources so that they could obtain gainful employment and provide for themselves. Last but certainly not least, Courtney recently became a mother to a bouncing baby boy, Brian Linson. He is her prized possession. She is enjoying every second of motherhood with Brian as her newfound motivation. She is determined to live life to the fullest and create generational wealth. So we'll get right into the podcast and just tell me a little bit about you and what made you pick HBCU and the Southern University HBCU.
Okay. So my name is Courtney Walker. I'm from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I was born and raised here. I went to Park Forest Elementary, Woodlawn High School, Park Forest Middle. And then my parents went to Southern University, and also my great-grandmother went to Southern University. Now, initially, I wanted to be a cosmetologist. But my dad and I had a talk, and he was like, you know what? You can get so much further in life if you had that degree behind your name. So I'm not going to let you settle. No offense to any cosmetologists out there. He was like, I'm not going to let you settle with just going to cosmetology school. You're too bright. You need a degree. And of course, Southern was my first option, being that both parents went there and my great-grandmother. I definitely had to know what that HBCU experience was like. I had a scholarship through Dillard University out in New Orleans, but I was more, you know, prone to going to Southern being that I had that knowledge base. I knew more about Southern. My dad was in a band. He had my sister and I acclimated with the university at about 7 years of age. So it was no choice. You know, that was my first and only choice. I had no other options. My heart was golden blue.
Oh, and so that's how you got there. Once you got there, what was your experience like?
Oh my God. So initially, I didn't know what to expect. Southern has this thing. I don't know if they do it anymore, but when I was there, they had this thing called Jaguar Preview, which was a weekend-long orientation. I want to say I checked in on a Thursday and left on a Sunday evening. That was the best experience ever. Like, that just gave you a glimpse of what the college life was going to be about. So when I checked into Jaguar Preview, of course, I was 17. I was nervous. I didn't know anyone else on campus at the time. But got there and we grouped off into majors. Initially, I was a business management major. So I met so many phenomenal people within a 1 hour time frame. Once I got into the room in Toddy Hall and I met my roommate, it was no looking back. Michael, did you hang up on me?
I'm sorry. But if you have, do you have Do Not Disturb on your phone? Are you using your phone?
It's not on Do Not Disturb, but I didn't have any calls or anything coming through.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. I don't
That's
know what
okay.
happened there. But
I'm
if you
like,
could put
glad
it
you're
on
not
Do Not
talking too much.
Disturb. No. I was like, oh, she about to go in. Oh, so
So, do we have to start over?
no, we don't have to start over.
Okay.
I'll just snip it out or cut it to where it needs to be. But you were talking about meeting your first roommate or your roommate and
Yes.
meeting people.
Yes. I got there. I was talking about Jaguar Preview first day. This was like July 2010 before the fall semester started. And I met this cool girl. I'm not going to display her name right now. I don't want to ruin the book. But anyway, I met her and a couple of other people. And like I said, I fell in love with them. I felt like I was at home. I was at home away from home. And my home was only 20 minutes away. But anywho, when school started, but Jaguar Preview got us prepared for the fall semester. We had our schedules printed. We were all processed with financial aid. We knew where we were going. So, we had the people, I want to just say tour guides, showing us where all of the buildings were. So we were definitely prepared for the fall semester, in which I love. And during Jag Preview, they gave us these little cafeteria cards where we were able to eat as if we were students for free during the Jag Preview time anyway. And the food was phenomenal, Michael. Oh my God. We had fried fish,
The
macaroni and
food?
cheese. The
What?
food that hooked me right then and there. I was on campus. So and Burger King and everything else. I wasn't going anywhere. I'm a big foodie. But once I ate in the cafe for the first time, I was like, yeah, I can do this. I'm hooked. So it was from the people to the food. I felt like the staff, once I actually started my fall semester, there was no one that I couldn't turn to ask a question. Everyone had answers to everything. No one looked down on you for asking questions. I was able to walk up to random people and ask, do you know anything about this professor? Where can I go to get a book? I was 17. I was clueless, but once
As
I
we
got
all are.
acclimated, yes. Once I got acclimated, everything was good. I loved the environment. Everything was family oriented. My teachers felt like aunts and uncles. I never felt like I had to be withdrawn or I had to not be myself. I was always able to be myself. And one thing about Southern, in which I love, and I don't know, we see it a lot in the community now, the African American community, where our young females tend to go out with their bonnets on and their head wraps or whatever. But one thing about Southern and one professor in particular, Dr. Thomas, I don't know if he's still there. He was a history professor, and oh my goodness. I walked in class one day, it was pouring down raining. I'm natural, so you don't want your hair to get wet, right? Especially after that fresh silk press. Oh my goodness. It was pouring down raining and my hair was starting to poof up, so I ran to the restroom and threw my little scarf on my head. I walked to the classroom and Dr. Thomas was like, "Miss Walker." I'm like, "Sir." He was like, "Where are you going? This is totally unprofessional. Either you lose the head wrap or don't come to my class." That taught me a lifelong lesson. Never go anywhere else unprofessional. So if it's raining, no soup press for me. I have to check the forecast before I go get my hair done these days. But yeah, I learned so much about professionalism, about how to analyze policies. Like my grad school degree, I have a master's of public administration. And that taught me everything that I needed to know to get me where I am today. Thank God for all of the professors there in the public admin department. I've learned how to analyze policies, how to be a change maker in my community, just how to write grants and how to manage nonprofits, like everything that I need to know to, you know, set me to where I need to be for the rest of my life. That's where I'm at now. And I'm just so grateful. I'm forever indebted to Southern.
So where do you see yourself being for the rest of your life? Like, what does that look like? I'm a reverse engineerist. I'm speaking into existence, working into reality. So that's a word I created, a phrase I created. Where we take the ultimate goal and reverse engineer that back to where we're at and put in the work to create that goal, that ultimate goal. So we about to speak it into existence and work it into reality. So where do you see yourself?
So my primary goal is to help the homeless, help the less fortunate. And I also want to be a change maker in the domestic violence arena. Mm. I just got kind of personal, but a bad relationship where violence was a part of that. And, you know, now I'm a single mom with a 9-month-old, and I foresee myself having a nonprofit to where I help other women get on their feet after leaving an abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to think that they have to stay in a situation where they're being controlled or, you know, where they feel forced to stay when there are options where you can leave and you can do better.
Mm-hmm.
Saying for yourself or for your children. So I just want to ultimately be able to help women to get in the place where they can feel totally independent.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh. That's interesting because one of my coaching clients went through or is going through the transition from being in an abusive relationship to getting out of it, to the legal issues, the restraining orders, all of that stuff. And like I said, I'm a reverse engineer. So in my life coaching, what I do is I can kind of see where people can help others.
Yes.
Before they even know that they can help others. So my client is a dog groomer. I don't know if there's a specific word, but she makes really good money. She's really good at what she does. And one of the things that I see with domestic violence victims, victims of domestic violence, I don't know how to say it, but is that they usually have been with their significant other for a while, and that significant other has not let them expand their horizons and be able to be independent. And so I was like, hey, you can you get really good at dog grooming, and if you could teach a course on dog grooming to help somebody get into that field. So now as her give back is you can teach a woman how to do groom dogs, which is kind of like a therapy because you get to play with dogs.
Yes.
And you can teach them how to be independent and live on their own and make a living off of a skill or a trade. And then you can help them as well, kind of mentor them out of that situation and tell them about stories of how you got through your specific time. So I commend you on doing that and continue your process, because we all here to support. We got to protect Black women, and not just Black women only, but all women, because y'all hold the keys to life.
Yes,
literally, y'all know. So tell me about what you're doing now to prepare yourself for your future. I know you got a recent newborn, yes. Pretty much.
Well, being that I have my MP, currently putting things in place to open a nonprofit. I have Agape House Baton Rouge, in which I want to expand it to Agape House Louisiana. I'm still on the fence about whether or not I want to cater to the homeless, cater to victims of domestic violence, or a combination of both. And more than likely, it's going to be a combination of both. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to, like, really get my plan in order. I'm the owner of CC's Freelance Services, in which I've been expanding my clientele recently. I write grants. I help with nonprofit management, strategic planning, resume drafting, business planning, and things of that nature. I also develop websites for upcoming businesses. So I'm trying to, you know, kind of put my hands everywhere. I just finished real estate school.
Dang.
I just finished property and casualty school. So I'm like, I'm doing a lot. And I know I need to slow down and really, like, focus on one thing.
No, it'll come. Are you all right? I think you're on the right track, because the more skills you have, the more connections you can make to make something really innovative. And that's what a lot of people don't really understand, is that the Elon Musk of the world, the Jeff Bezos and you know, Jay-Z, Dame Dad, all of these people have had experiences within their own self that contribute to the ultimate purpose of what they want to do. So if you can go to real estate school and do all these different things and get all these knowledge and skills, I think it's definitely going to benefit you later on once that light bulb comes on. Oh, yes. Oh, this is it. So I'm here to reassure. I'm talking to you from the future, here to reassure you that keep going.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And sorry,
I am claiming that success in Jesus' name. And that's one thing I found too. God does not put more on you than what you can bear. And mm-hmm. in the midst of it all, like, nothing but blessings comes from triumph. And I know that sounds crazy, but with trials come testimonies. So I'm just grateful for where I am today. And luckily I have a support system, so I'm able to get up every day and move forward. I'm currently employed with Murray & Murray Law Firm, and I absolutely love my bosses. I'm learning a lot about bankruptcy. I'm on the fence now about law school. I was always like, I'm not going to law school. But now I'm thinking, maybe I need to go to law school and have that under my belt as well, you know? Mm-hmm. That way I can legally help others also.
Yeah, and do you, like, you went to Southern as an undergraduate only? Or you
undergrad
went to...
and grad school.
Okay. So yes. You got the whole experience.
Yes, I did.
What was that like, that transition? Like, do you think that you should have went somewhere else to get your graduate degree?
Absolutely
or...
not. No one yeah. else is getting my coins but SUBR. It wasn't much different grad school from undergrad. The only uh-huh. difference was being a full-time employee. And then going to school after work, you know, that was a little different for me. But luckily, I was young and still single and didn't have any children. So I was able to get everything done and learn how to manage my time. The main difference was not being able to attend the events like I did undergrad. Mm-hmm. So I had to miss out on fun and get work done. Had to be an yeah. adult at that stage, but it wasn't much difference. And honestly, the teachers were the same. I was able to connect with everyone. You know, I made lifelong friendships with more people from grad school than undergrad. I know they say in undergrad, you meet your lifelong friends, but grad school is really where you connect and you stay in contact with people that you meet.
Yeah. I met one of my best friends in grad school. Like, we've been homies for a long time. I'm going to see him and his family next weekend. So
where is he located?
He's like 4 hours away, a 4 hour drive away from where okay. I am in Kansas City. I'm in Kansas City. He's kind of in the St. Louis area.
Got you. Okay.
Yeah. So I missed his wife's birthday. I miss saying happy birthday to her last year. Her birthday's next Monday or Sunday, and so I'm just surprised and go down there and
I love it.
You know, say hi.
I love it.
But those are the connections that you make. Like, I didn't. Most of my friend group is from college and grad school. Talk about to the young ladies. I know women are more mature than guys, but I don't like to direct people on what they should do, but the time that you have to put in to be successful, you have to devote that time. And I know women have a clock that's ticking in their head about marriage and family and stuff like that. And I talk to the younger generations about like it taking that time, that 4 to 6 years to actually just focus on gaining knowledge and becoming you, because those are critical years in our lives that we can cultivate ourselves and be a better person for that individual that we may spend the rest of our lives with or have a relationship with.
Definitely. And I have a guy sister, and I'm speaking to all young women now. I have a guy sister who I was just talking to her and her friend literally 3 nights ago. She was sitting on my couch, or they were sitting on my couch. They're coming up to 21 years of age. And honestly, I would say once you get your high school diploma, go to college. And I understand taking that break. She took a break and she did not. She was so indecisive about going to college. Honestly, and no offense to anyone with just a high school diploma, but you can't get far with just a high school diploma. You have to take that time, especially if you want to be successful in life. Get those degrees. Unless you can invent something, either way it goes. You know, you can be a business owner. You can invent something. You can be a multimillionaire without a degree. But definitely invest in yourself. Take the time that's needed. I don't care if it's 10 plus years. Take that time that's needed to build yourself up so that you won't ever have to depend on anyone but God. You know, I took out personally, I was 17 when I started college. I finished school the semester I made 21. I finished in 3.5 years undergrad. I took 3 years out of school from undergrad to grad school. That was the toughest transition ever, Michael, getting back into school after taking a 3-year break. Yeah. But I knew I needed it because with just my bachelor's in political science, I wasn't getting where I needed to be in life. I was working at Louisiana Healthcare Connections. I worked there for 5 years and I ended up getting promoted to a marketing position. I was a community relations specialist. I loved it. It was a lot of traveling. But I ended up getting into grad school during that season. I wrapped up in 2019 in the spring. And I'm very grateful that I was able to go to school, work a full-time job, and balance things out. And success does not happen overnight. So if you really want it, you have to dedicate that time. It was a lot of sleepless nights for me, Michael. Like, honestly, I was busting my butt. I was primarily getting up 7 a.m, had to be in Lafayette for like 9:30. So I was in Lafayette most of the day. My day usually ended around 5. I had to be on campus for 6. And for the most part, like I said, having that family-friendly vibe where I can text my teacher, hey, I'm coming from Lafayette. I'm stuck in traffic. I might be about 20 minutes late. I know that's not a good look, but I knew I had to get the money too because I was independent, had my own apartment, tried to get my life established around that time, so I couldn't miss out on my money, but I didn't want to be irresponsible and being late for school. But you know, I couldn't control the traffic. Anywho, right. I would be in class for 2.5 hours, 3 hours sometimes, depending on the teacher, and after school had to come home and get work done. I was typing 20 page papers or whatever the case may be, but I had to stay dedicated. For the most part, my day started around I'm gonna say I got up around 6:30, 7 o'clock. I didn't go to bed until 3 o'clock the next morning. So you have to put that time in. And luckily I had coffee, Red Bull, prayer for the most part. But I dedicated that time and I'm grateful that I did, because now I don't have to depend on anyone, you know, but myself and Jesus to get me where I need to be in life. If you don't have that educational background, you know, people slam doors on you. So I would say dedicate that time. Like, I know there's a biological clock ticking. I was that person. I was that girl. I'm like, I'm 28 now. Me, the month before I turned 28. I got married before I gave birth. But I was that person where I was like, I want a baby before 30. Or I wanted a baby initially at 25. I'm like, if I don't have a baby at 25, I don't know if I'm going to have kids and this, that, and the other. Like, I don't want to be too old being a mom. But I'm grateful that I was able to get my degrees before I started my family, because had I not done it that way, I know most people can do it, but it's definitely challenging trying to be a new mom and being a new mommy and trying to juggle school and work. I know that's exhausting.
Yes, it has to be.
I would encourage any young female to go to school first. Get your degree first. You know, you can have that guy next to you. Make sure you have a guy that's not intimidated by your success. Watch out for the red flags. Have somebody that's, you know, if you're into God, I'm a full-fledged Christian. So you have to have someone that's equally yoked. You know, watch out for red flags. The first red flag, run. That's what I'm going to say on this podcast right now. Don't settle for anything less than your best. If he's not encouraging you to get up and go to school and get your work done, if he's trying to pull you to go to a party while you have deadlines to meet for school or work, run. He's not the one for you. He has to be driven as much as you are, and he has to encourage you to be successful. Success is everything in life. Education is everything. Education and networking would open more doors than anything else. So to the young ladies, go to school, dedicate the time. I don't care if you get 4 or 5 hours of sleep. Dedicate that time. Put that work in. Without the work, you're not going to be successful.
Talk about it, because you mentioned something key there is the, and I think relationships, we don't touch on that as much. Not just intimate relationships, but just relationships, period. Relationships with our friends, our family, and different things like that. When you say if you see a red flag, run, that's easier said than done, right? In most cases,
because, definitely.
So what does that look like? That's hard, because you want to give somebody a second shot, or it's not a deal breaker, is what a lot of people call it, you know. But you know it's a sign that they like that person ain't good for you, or not good for you, but like have your best interest at hand.
Michael, and maybe it's me. I just think it's me not being able to pick. But I've been in 3 serious relationships, my last one being my husband. And when you get to a point to where you're afraid to be yourself, that's a red flag. And I understand giving people second chances wholeheartedly, being that I've been in 3 crazy relationships. But I'm not going to say they were horrible, but they were crazy enough for me to walk away. So if you get to a point to where you see a red flag and you want to give a second chance, if you see another red flag, be it he's checking your cell phone, are watching your every move, doesn't want you to communicate with others. That was my thing. Once I got to being isolated, I was forced to be isolated. I couldn't really have a relationship with anyone. I was being accused of being involved with people who I was never involved with, like the false accusations several times. You don't want that in your life. You can be bad all by yourself. So I chose to leave that situation alone. You can't deal with people that's gonna keep you in a box when you have a beautiful
so much potential.
You know, you have so much potential, even, you know, bettering yourself. If someone is trying to put a limit on you bettering yourself, don't settle for that. period. You know,
that's family, friends.
That's anybody.
Anybody.
That's anybody. If someone is telling you, girl, you don't need that degree, when you know you want that degree and you know that degree is going to take you places where not having it won't take you, you need to be like, look, you know, I'm going to have to cut you off. Mama, love your mama, but I don't care if it's your mama. Anybody trying to limit you from getting where you want to be in life, cut that person off or at least distance yourself from that person. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I had to do it. Like, and the reason why I asked was because that was one of the hardest transitions that I had to make, was that, like, these are people real close to me, so I have to limit their mental influence on me by limiting their time in my environment, mental space. Like, all right, like, I'm not about to sit here and defend myself on what I want to do every time I speak to you. Like, well, you know, I ain't even gonna go all the way into it, but when I feel like I'm defending myself, when I'm a good person, when I do stuff for other people, when I have the education, the experience, I'm like, who am I really talking to? Like, why? Who are you to be judging me on what I want to do, right? And
exactly.
And that's family, friends, intimate relationships, all of that stuff. And even coworkers and colleagues, like, sometimes you have to limit your time with those type of people too.
And the coworkers will try to dig, you hear me? So, and that's another piece of advice for younger people listening. Don't give personal information to people at work, period. Because they will dig. So just try to keep information limited. Keep it to work information. And even if y'all become friends, try not to give personal information to coworkers.
Yeah, yeah.
Period.
Especially because that mental space is something unique. Like, you gotta protect it.
Definitely. And I know we're limited on time, but I had a friend. Well, I'm not gonna really call her a friend. I met her a few years ago, and her energy was awesome. We hung out, we went and ate, and then she just started clinging to me. And I didn't mind that. She was a little older than me, but at the same time, she was so mentally draining, Michael. Mm. I had to let her go. And it wasn't even a heads up, let her go. Like, she called my phone over 40 times a day. She wanted to be around me 24/7. She was, like, so mentally draining, and it was always some type of drama. And I don't like if someone calls me for advice and I give them my advice and they don't listen. Then they come back with the same stuff over and over. I'm like, look, I need my mental sanity. I can't go crazy because you're in a crazy situation. I don't want to wake up at 5 a.m. because you and your baby's father are having arguments in the wee hours and you need somewhere to come. And I didn't mind opening my door, but at the same time, don't overdo it. Mm-hmm. She was just one of those. She crowded my mental space. I had to let her go. So if you even have someone like that in your life to where it's always an issue every time they pick up the phone and it's never nothing positive coming out of their mouths, don't let anyone else's energy drain you. Like, you have to surround yourself with positive people.
And one negative comment or situation, it needs 17 positive.
Definitely.
To negate that one negative.
Definitely.
So you need to stack up on the positivity, because when that one negative come, you gonna drop 17.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if that's true, but it seemed to be. Like,
it's definitely,
I'm like,
true.
This one, like, I'm listening to one comment. Like,
yes.
One comment is gonna bring
you
out.
To drain you of your mental. That is,
yes,
definitely true.
I'm up here like, dang, is that real? You know, so I study success, and, like, I've read a whole bunch of books in the past few years and listened to a whole bunch of most motivational videos, took classes and all of these different things in regards to success, and just studying my own success and the success of others. Like, and the thing that I have to look at these things that they're saying, the gurus what they're saying and see if they're correct. You know what I mean? And that's what I've done. I've connected the dots, and that's what I try to do for other people. And I'm glad you're comfortable with talking about your relationships and stuff, because I don't think I've ever gotten into the fact that, hey, there's people around us that we need to purge on our way, and that everything that we're doing as a young self is going to help our old self. So if we practice having those conversations and sticking to seeing that red flag and dealing with that red flag, then we are moving forward in our development as a successful person.
Exactly. And that's one thing too, the stigma around, and I know this is a little off topic, but when it comes to being mentally drained, the stigma around mental health is so high to where people are ashamed to even talk about it. But I've had mental health issues in my past, and I feel like I've, thank God, completely healed from it. But I think it more so got started from being around people who are so mentally draining and just constantly being involved with other people's issues. I had to learn how to remove myself. And from that, I was able to get rid of the Lexapro, and I didn't have to take any anxiety pills anymore because I was solely focused on where I needed to be. And I just let go of all of the negativity around me. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing for the young folks out there, too. If you're dealing with some type of mental health issue, you're afraid to talk about it, try to let go of the negatives, and maybe you'll see some results.
That is, that's one of the most, a key. And I started seeing the therapist during the pandemic because they had, I was just wanting to see what that was like. And I know I had some issues that stem from traumatic experiences in my life that if they go undealt with, they come out in other ways.
Exactly. And
I wanted to tap in because when you're a reverse engineerist, you already see what the future holds. So you are already making plans to deal with these things along the way. And when you see obstacles in front of you, like, you have to deal with them obstacles before you can reach that next step. And I know that, like, I'm writing the book, my first book. I got plenty more coming, but getting over that hump to just write the book. Like, I speak the book every single day, right?
You're right, and congratulations on that.
Thank you, and I'll be sure to send you the link.
Please do.
Of the book. But, you know, just getting over the fact of, like, my success and what I see in my vision of my success and my past holding me back from wanting to enjoy that for myself. That's what I had to go into my therapist with. I was like, I don't even know where my motivation is going to come from once I get success, but because then people are going to be rooting for me so much. I've drawn from the negativity so much that people want me to lose. They're not giving me opportunities. You know, that has pushed me so far. And now I'm like, when I get success and everybody, you know, not everybody loves me, but like the people that I know and, my fans or whatever love me and support me and because I've been speaking the same stuff for 20 years like this is what I want to do for 20 years and they finally see it come and now they know that what I was saying was true, like where does my motivation come from, because I don't have no haters now. I mean,
exactly.
I don't know where they come from, but you know, that transition was like, I have to be okay with going forward with my story, my perspective, and just writing the book. So I'm sitting down this summer and getting it written all the way out. And I know my success is going to come. I'm a reverse engineer. So I see that vision. I see it clearly. And that's how we have to be. And relationships is a part of that. Like some of the coworkers that I work with over the years, like I've had to distance myself in that work environment so that I don't they don't bring down my energy. And it really, especially if you think bigger than a lot of people around you. If you think bigger, you want more, people will try to keep you at that level of I wouldn't say mediocrity, but average.
Yeah.
Because they did this in their lives and they're content with whatever they have in their lives. You don't have to be content.
Exactly. And I've dealt with that personally as well. And I just had to realize that not everyone wants to see you exceed them in life. But you have to, and even with that statement you just made with the, where are my supporters going to come from? I don't have any haters anymore. You know, you have to be self-motivated and no one else in the world have to support you as long as you support yourself. And that's where the true success comes from.
Right. And that's what I came to learn through therapy. And let's normalize that now. Like, that's something that a lot of Black people need, because we've had trauma, and even we had trauma in our lives, but we also live the trauma that our relatives and ancestors, it comes out in us genetically. Exactly. and we don't realize that the things that trigger us, that we don't know why it triggers us or why we want to watch bad TV or do the different things that we do, that's genetically passed on from traumatic ways. Like if you're an alcoholic now, or have not an alcoholic, but like have issues with drinking or something like that, or drugs, it might be something from your past, your ancestors, that they did it as a coping mechanism for them. And now you got that trigger, that same trait. That trait,
yeah.
that triggers you to do this certain thing to deal with it. And if we don't understand that, have you ever read the book Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome by Dr. George? You never heard of that?
I've never heard of it. I've never read it. Oh, but I will man. Look it up. I will order it so I can read it.
Yeah. It talks about how basically Black people haven't been given the mental therapy that we need to transition into the real world. We just handled it just by coping throughout the years. And
I agree with that statement.
It's a powerful book. Like you can go on YouTube and search Dr. Joy DeGruy to get kind of the gist of the book too. That's what I did. I haven't read the book all the way through because it ain't on audiobook, but I would highly recommend that if you're dealing with trauma and stuff, for those of my listeners out there.
Post-traumatic slave disorder?
Syndrome.
Slave syndrome, okay. I will definitely look that up.
Yeah, she's one of my favorite people. I hope to meet her one day. Speak it into existence, working into reality. So let's go back into HBCUs, the reason why we're here, and talk about a little bit about your chapter and you know, kind of a snippet on what we can hear and from our read from the book.
Okay. So my chapter pretty much sums up how I got into Southern University, what made me get into it. And like I spoke previously on, my parents went to Southern. They met there. My dad proposed to my mom on Southern's campus.
Oh, really?
Right in front of Seymour Hall. So I was definitely a Southern baby. My dad was in the band. And I've been a Jaguar fan for as long as I can remember. We went to, my sister and I, along with my parents, traveled state to state during football season. We pretty much went to every football game up until my college years. So I knew from jump, you know, like I said, I wanted to be a cosmetologist, but I always wanted a college degree as well. And my dad spoke with me and he was like, Courtney, you need to go and get a degree. He was like, no knock to anyone that solely has a cosmetology license, but your IQ is too high for you to just settle for having a cosmetology license. Go and experience Southern University. It's going to be life-changing. And he was not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
My great-grandmother, she recently passed away last October. She was 94 when she walked the grounds of Southern University. And before she started losing her memory, she used to tell me and my sister that Southern was the greatest thing that ever happened to her. You know, she came about during a time where education wasn't truly permitted, you know, for Blacks.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
with that being said, you know, it sparked something in me. I'm like, we were never able to, in the beginning, we were never able to learn. They didn't mm-hmm. want us to learn how to write or to read. You know, they wanted to keep us down. And as a Black woman, a mother of a Black son now, you know, prior to even having a child, I knew someday I would have children. And I wanted to always set the foundation for them. So having an education, a degree was not even much, you know, something where I could sit down and be like, do I really need this? I knew from jump that I needed to have that behind my name. My mom was a business owner. She owned, and she still has the building, Rosa Sharon Daycare Learning Center. She owned that building for 20 plus years. And she had her degree in rehab psychology from Southern. She always tell me, you have to exceed me. She always wanted her kids to have a higher education than her. So she set the foundation, her and my dad. You know, mm-hmm. he went to Southern and he majored in business and engineering. So I didn't have an option. It was no, I'm not going to college. So I had to go. And like I said, initially I wanted to do business management. I had a dream of being a hairstylist and owning a major franchise of, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess like beauty schools and hair salons. Mm-hmm. But long story short, that changed at Southern. I changed my major. That was in my chapter as well, to political science. Back in 2011, I was in Dr. Thomas's class. He was an older Black guy. He reminded me of my grandfather. And he saw just nothing but potential in me. And he sat me down one day after class. I was the main one doing all of my work. I aced every single thing. Not to brag or anything, but that's just, I was very studious and was always a perfectionist still to this day. And he pulled me up to the front of his class one day after my presentation. And he said, you guys, Courtney is, she's such a phenomenal student. And he was like, she's majoring in business, but she needs to be a politician or a lawyer. And he just kept saying, she is my lawyer. Like, she's so well-spoken and her presentations are phenomenal. And I don't see why she's trying to limit herself to, and I even told him I wanted to have my own hair salon and I wanted mm-hmm. to open up beauty schools. And he was like, Courtney, you know, you can do whatever you want to do, but you are a change maker. He instilled that in me. He was like, it's something about you. He said, I don't know what it is, but it's something about you and you're going to change policies and you're going to be a top lawyer one day. And I was like, I don't know about the lawyer part, Dr. Thomas. He said, you're going to go to law school. You need to major in pre-law. And with that being said, I ended up praying on it and got to doing some research. I spoke with other attorneys and I was going to pre-law. I changed my major and I loved everything about political science. The law part, not so much. I'm not going to sit there and lie, even though I work mm-hmm. for, you know, a law office now, I like the bankruptcy part, but I don't know about law school. I want to go, but I'm still on the fence.
That's
but
all
I'm
right.
I'm more so into, you know, changing policies. I learned how to answer in grad school. And what really sparked me was the injustice that we saw back in, I want to say that was 2012 when Trayvon Martin was murdered. That ignited everything inside of me. I just knew from that point on that I wanted to be an advocate for African Americans or people in general that's not receiving the justice that's needed. And then from mm-hmm. there spiraled other shootings. Then we saw Alton Sterling. And we saw recently, we saw Ronald Green. So it's like, it's still so much going on justice mm-hmm. in the world, and how these police officers are getting away with murdering our young Black men, you know, Black men that's just starting off with their families and whatnot, and taking them away from us without really much of no justice being served. So, long story short, I keep saying it, and I'm very loquacious, so hopefully you can cut me off if need be, Mike.
No, I'm enjoying it. Like, keep going. This is the stuff we want to hear.
The injustice in America that sparked me into hopping into public administration. And once I learned how to analyze policies and how to strategically plan things out, may it be business or anything else, I said, you know what, I'm going to run for something someday. I still want to run for maybe mayor someday or something of that nature, state rep. I want to do something to where I can be a change advocate. It's so much in this, especially in my local community in Baton Rouge, that I want to see change in terms of the health disparities that we still see during my pregnancy. I'm just going to put that out there. During my pregnancy, I was diagnosed with preeclampsia, and I knew within myself that something was wrong. And I had a Caucasian provider at the time, and the Caucasian provider kept telling me, you know, your blood pressure is just a little high. It's a little high. When you're pregnant and your blood pressure is like 155 over 100, when it's usually perfect, that's a problem. And me being me, I had to advocate for myself and for my unborn, because I didn't want anything happening. I'm noticing nothing but fluid retention, and I'm like, something's wrong with my body. My blood pressure never spikes like this. So at 7 months of pregnancy, I was diagnosed with preeclampsia and was told that I was going to have to get induced. And if I wouldn't have constantly mentioned to my doctor that something is wrong with me, mm-hmm. he would have never looked into it further. And I kept going from him to a specialist, and the specialist sat down with me. He was Caucasian, but he sat down with me after getting my urinalysis, and he was like, you know what, Ms. Walker, I'll be frank with you. You have preeclampsia. We're not going to keep this baby in beyond 37 weeks. We're going to put you on bed rest. I knew something was wrong, but had I been under African-American care, I feel like they would have caught that sooner, and I wouldn't have had to get induced early. And with the health disparities with Black women dying, you know, mm-hmm. during pregnancy or during childbirth, that sparked me into going into healthcare administration as my concentration during my grad school degree. And I learned so much about not only that, but the obesity that African Americans, you know, we play a major part in. The obesity factor and high blood pressure, mm-hmm. diabetes. Like, we have so many diseases versus other races in America. So I got to doing research there, along with income disparities, and just, it's just so much.
Yeah, it is.
Like, we're not, it's no equality between African Americans and other races. It's like, we're the lowest of the low. And it's sad to say, but it's like, what can we do? And I ask myself that question often. It's like, what can I do to make us equal? You know, mm-hmm. how can we, number one, you know, do things to better our health? How can we become more knowledgeable on ways to cut down on obesity and other, I guess, major health factors mm-hmm. that we have mm-hmm. going on right now in our communities.
I have the answer. We got to win at every single thing that we do. We have to win. Equality is cool, but winning is everything. You know, not you ain't gonna win the championship. The championship is, and I'm not just talking to you, but it just in general, because I ask myself these questions too. You're not gonna win a championship wanting to be equal with your opponent.
That's true.
And they're not necessarily like the other races ain't necessarily our opponent. But we got to win every place we're at.
But unfortunately, it's just the cards that we were dealt. And like you said, that's coming from slavery. Like, that's it's the cards that we were dealt from way back in the 1700s. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like now we need to make better choices, first and foremost. And we need in our community, and I know we have nutritious places where we can go, and everything that we do is a choice. So we can choose McDonald's over Subway any day. But at the end of the day, we have to realize that we're more prone to the diseases out there. Even with the COVID, you know, African Americans were primarily affected by COVID-19. As opposed to other races. Why? I don't know exactly why that was, you know, the case. But at the end of the day, it's like we were taking precautionary measures as much as anyone else, but we were still more impacted by it versus any other race.
Yeah, and it's tough, but my favorite quote of all time is, every adversity comes with it the seed of its equivalent or greater advantage. So we were born in adversity. We were brought to this country in adversity. Like, all of that adversity is the seed. And however big that adversity is how big our seeds are. And our ancestors didn't get to use their seeds of adversity. We get to use our ancestors' seeds of adversity. That has been passed down for years, hundreds of years, their adversity. And we're feeling it today with the health issues that we have, the stress issues that we have, all the issues and adversities that we have been, and they've been brought to us not out of just our own doing. And we have to deal with that. And the only way I see to deal with that is success, and not just success, is massive success.
Exactly.
Success equals winning. You got to win at every single thing that you do. And you are there in these spaces for a reason. I'm talking to my listeners, you, whoever. Y'all there for a reason. We need everybody's contribution to whatever they see fit. And those are the ideas that we have. Like, you have ideas, like, and you're pursuing that. So you're seeing the opportunities that come from those ideas. And a part that you, like, the success clue that I want people to understand is that as you were growing up, or going through from high school to now, you were listening to people that had a bigger vision for you. They weren't just trying to steer you away from your initial thoughts, but they saw that you did limit yourself, but you also had the wherewithal to listen and take advice to go in that direction and explore it. and a lot of young people, and it's a generational thing that has happened that I'm trying to help young people deal with and older people deal with, is that, like, y'all can't just tell us what to do. Like, don't just tell me what to do and not tell me why or how.
No, exactly.
Just go work it. Because I got custodians that are older Black gentlemen that they got money and they built it up over the years, but they still going in and working as a custodian. You know what I mean? Yes. I'm not trying to do that. I mean, you can give me some pointers on, hey, you should, you know, buy these cash homes or whatever that's on the foreclosed block. That's the information that I need to enhance what I'm already. So don't just tell me, oh, why aren't you staying in this job? I don't want to stay here because it's not a good environment for me. I'm not telling you everything, but don't tell me I need to stay somewhere for 40 years just like you did.
Exactly.
that don't make sense. And then now you discredit the information that you give me because you're expecting me to do what you said to do. No, I'll listen and I'll see how it applies, and if it works for me, I'll apply it. But yes. But I'm a little bit older. But if I was like 19, 20 years old and somebody older is speaking that way, we still have that. And this goes back to the relationship that father, mother type figure, and a child, right?
Right.
So whatever that parental figure says is in the back of our heads because we want to listen to the older generations, but most of that information is outdated. So if it don't fit in the times that we live in, they haven't evolved their thinking as it relates to the situations that they were in. Like, we live in a whole different time, so.
And especially amongst us, Michael, not to cut you off, but.
No, you go.
Amongst us, I'm going to say my parents' generation, they believe that you have to go to school, get a degree, and go and work for a company, you know, get established into your career, but you go and work for a company up until retirement. You know, they mm-hmm. believe that that's life. Now, we don't believe that, but my mom, you know, my dad is still working for the company he's been working with since I was born, so over 28 years. But my mom, she was like, forget that. She got her degree, and her father to this day still works. He's retired. He works for himself, but he still works at 82 years of age. That's mm-hmm. not my reality. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So my mom broke it when she became an entrepreneur, and she had her business over 20 years, and, you know, just watching her as a young Black woman, and she had so many obstacles. Like, when she tried to open her business back in 92, you know, during that time, people had to go and sign petitions to even obtain a building in a certain area. So mm-hmm. I don't know if it's still the same way, because I've never had a building for a business before, but I don't think you have to jump through as many hoops as people had to jump back in 92. So long story short, my parents had to pretty much go through, you know, hell to open up a business as a young Black couple. You know, my mm-hmm. dad was still working at the plant that he's currently working at. But my mom, she was, you know, she branched out on her own. Luckily, she had support. But she mm-hmm. was successful for a long time. But when the state came out to do evaluations and investigations or whatnot, you know, with childcare, they have to go in every so often and check in on things. They were way more strict on her than any other facility that was white owned. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So still to this day, we have those, I guess,
discrepancies. Those
disparities. And, you know, they come through and they're going to hit us harder than any other race. So of course we have to be on top of everything. But our goal as younger people, we want to get it on our own. And yep. that was my thing. Like, I quit my job. I resigned from Louisiana Healthcare Connections because honestly, I was going through depression. In 2019, I found out I was pregnant the semester I graduated with my MPA. And I lost the baby at about 8 weeks of pregnancy, and that's okay. But going through that, going through a rocky relationship, and I guess that should have been my red flag prior to getting married, but going through a rocky relationship, working full-time, and going to school at night, and during that time, I opened a boutique. I still have it. It's Exotic Souls and Accessories. Trying to fulfill orders after school and keeping up with everything, I was just totally overwhelmed. And the person who I was working under at the time, like, she was pushing me way too hard. And I just started losing it mentally. And I was like, I can't, I guess you must have thought I was Superwoman or something. I was like, I can't be in New Orleans and Lafayette in the same day and go to BR and do everything else that I have to do. Like, it was just too much. The things that she was requesting of me was impossible. And I think she did it purposely. And that's another thing, too, with dealing with someone of the same race. And my education was just about equal to hers. I was a semester mm-hmm. away from obtaining my MPA. But it's like, I feel like she was intimidated by the things that I was able to accomplish in such a short time. Whereas she had to jump through hoops, and instead of her having that sisterhood and trying to pull me up, she was trying mm-hmm. to tear me down. And that was, you know, too much for me. So I ended up resigning, in which the door came back open a little while later, but I turned it down. I started getting into campaign management. But long story short, I said all that to say I was able to branch out on my own in 2019. And once I started CC's freelance services, I really never had to look back. I started working in Murray & Murray because I got tired of just being by myself all the time. You know what I'm saying? I missed having that environment to where I can talk to other people throughout the day, because working for yourself and by yourself all day, like, of course I had clients, but they had jobs, and right. I'm trying to build jobs for them, or, you know, help them out with their own businesses. But I did start missing interacting with other people throughout the day, and I still have time being at the current firm that I'm at now to come home and do what I have to do and still, you know, do what I have to do for my son. I said all that to say, when you get your degree now in this generation, we want our own, and nothing can stop us from obtaining that but us. And we don't have to always listen to what older people tell us, because older people want us to go to school and find a career and stick with that career up until retirement. That's not the life that we are forced to live anymore. And there's so many people like the Super Sense of the world, and her sister Raven with Pretty Dimples. It's so many people that I see from Louisiana, you know, making such a big difference in not only the community, but just having that role model to look up to. You know, they started from nothing. Mm-hmm. And Super was a waitress, and she doesn't have a degree. And she made up this cosmetic line, the crayon case, and now she's a millionaire. You know what I'm saying? So that's very inspiring. That's something that, you know, us young Black women have to look forward to. You know, I'm claiming that millionaire status right now as we speak, you know, and I'm trying to work towards that goal, but I don't want to just have something. I want to be able to impact others in whatever I do in this life. You know, I don't want to die and people don't know me for what I did to help others, you know?
And you said it completely. I'll add on to that is, the only thing I would add on to that is that we have to listen to our older generations, but we don't have to apply it the way they apply it. So exactly. Listen to them, but apply it the way you see fit, because their information is outdated as far as the execution part is concerned. So we have to use that. It's like watching film on an opponent, a teammate, or, you know, in a team sport. You know, we got to watch they pass film to understand what they're doing, and so that we can make adjustments to win.
Exactly.
and to the young people out there, it is our time to win. We've been surviving for too long. It's our time to thrive. And that's the whole message of the Success Is My Religion podcast. Is it's time for us to thrive. It's time for us to look at the past, look at the present, and create the future. And I appreciate you being on for this podcast, Courtney. I know you got probably 100 things to do today, but I hope you enjoy your weekend. Is there any last word? Or you go ahead and plug the book real quick, because the book is coming out in the first week of June. This probably will be out after the book. It depends on when the book comes out. But plug the book for us, the HBCU Experience Movement.
Okay, so y'all, the official release date of the HBCU Experience LLC, the HBCU Southern University Baton Rouge Edition, will be out June 3rd, 2021. So everyone should be able to look on Amazon. If there are any other outlets, y'all may need to go ahead and hop on Instagram or Facebook and follow the HBCU Experience. Y'all can follow me at BGNCC or my business page at CC's Freelance Services. It was definitely a pleasure speaking with you today, Michael. Do you have any other questions for me? I hope I answered everything. I know I've been rambling.
No,
talking about everything.
and that's what it's for. This is that platform. We need to talk about everything. It's the nuances, that the little things that make people successful. So just understanding just your what we deal with on a regular basis is you did a fabulous job. That's all I can say.
Thank you. I definitely appreciate you. And thank you so much for the opportunity to be able to give a snippet of my chapter. I know I wasn't totally on topic because we kind of got off the topic just a tad bit, but I enjoyed speaking with you. I love what you do, and I pray nothing but success over you and your businesses.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Success Is My Religion podcast. Make sure you go get the HBCU Experience Movement's new book out on Amazon. Make them the best-selling authors this time again. Go get that book, the HBCU Experience, the Southern University System Edition. It is great. The co-authors are great. You heard it. Go get it. Talk to you soon.